DGB good stuffs. Hello, listeners.
Hey.
It's another episode of the BGB Good Stuffs podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And we are recording this episode over Discord because we will soon be in a situation where recording in the same room is going to become a little bit more difficult.
Less feasible.
Less feasible. So we're having to figure this out. And we hope we got that intro down right. We practiced a little bit with the delay and everything going on with the, you know,
with the internet. With the different, yeah, the internet latency, whatever you want to call it.
Right. So this is our experiment. And hopefully in the future, we'll get really good at this. And these new series of episodes coming across the waves from us to you, from us to each other. Yes, from us to us to you, will be just as good as the original episode. So,
yeah,
it's episode of BGB Good Stuffs.
Yep, September 1st, 2018.
And
this is also a Saturday, fun fact.
Mm-hmm. And so. So that's two episodes today.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you know it? And BGB Good Stuffs, for those who don't know, is the episode where, because normally on our podcast, we spend every episode talking about either one game or one topic, but a pretty narrow topic. And we spend the whole episodes just talking about that one thing. And we don't get a lot of time to talk about all the other games we play because we play a lot of games. We're gamers. And, you know, we just play more games than we have episodes in the month. So
right, and we usually talk about board games, so we also tend to talk about video games a little because
we like to talk about them. Well, what I'm trying to say is that this BGB Good Stuffs, these episodes, the first of the month, are our opportunity to talk about all the topics that we don't get a chance to talk about in our regular episodes, including but not limited to the board games we've played in addition to the ones we've discussed, as well as other types of gaming or other topics in general. Because we like a lot of stuff and we want to share everything we like. That's why we make the podcast.
Yeah.
And that's why we make these episodes, so that we can get to all the stuff that we can't normally. So, without any further ado, BGB Good Stuffs for September.
I want to jump into some news real quick.
Okay. We always start with the news.
Right. Board game news, from what I was able to write down, BattleCon Online released on Steam last weekend.
Very cool.
And I mean, I haven't gotten a chance to play it myself, but it's BattleCon.
Mm-hmm. And we did do an episode yet. We did an episode on BattleCon.
I know they have a mixture of the characters from a couple different games across the BattleCon series.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks, you know, it's BattleCon. I think it's going to be nice to have that the ability to match up with other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, previously, I mean, the last time we talked about this, we mentioned that getting other people to play BattleCon is a little bit of a chore because it's a lot for someone to have to pick up and learn. And because, I mean, the game is entirely like skill based. There's no luck to it. So a new player has to learn a lot in order to actually play effectively and win. So it'll be nice to have this new digital platform where you can just pair up with people that already have the interests and the skill that you seek in your opponent for BattleCon.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Willing participants.
There's also some Magic news, which it feels like every month there's something.
Yeah, although I think here's what we do, because the end of one month will be the announcement of a new set, and then the end of the next month will be the actual release of the new set. So I think it's actually kind of happening where...
And then there's the supplemental product for the third of the quarter.
Yeah,
I
mean, sometimes we double up on topics, but what can you do? We love Magic, and this is the news.
In this case, they announced a surprise supplemental product. This mm-hmm. is the Game Night box, I believe it's called. It is a box of five complete Magic decks, one for each color, and it's meant to be like a standalone playable thing you can do.
Right, so like, and it looked like it had an emphasis on multiplayer, too.
Right, well, yeah, it's meant to be multiplayer, because it's like, for people who like Magic, but they don't want to build a deck or buy singles or whatever, but they have, like, you know, a normal group, you can buy this at the cost of a board game and just play it instead of a board game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's a cool idea. Take.
Yeah.
It takes the place of the dual decks.
Right, and they kind of tried to do that with the Ix game.
Sorry, can you say that again? Your audio cut out a little bit.
Oh, they tried to do that with the Explorers of Ixalan board game.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think that panned out too well. So, I mean, I just making Magic decks for people to play against each other hopefully turns out well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Makes sense. There's also some...
No, go on.
I was going to say, there's also some video game news I want to touch on.
Well, I just wanted to say that there is a new Magic set coming out at the end of this month. That is the... what is it called? The Guilds of Ravnica?
Guilds of Ravnica.
Yeah. And so far...
Return to Ravnica.
There's only been one card spoiled, and that's that Buy a Box promo, which is, for those who don't know, Magic packs can come in boxes that cost around $120. And they started two sets ago a promotional thing where if you bought a box, you would get a card that was legal in the standard format, which means it's legal in the played format where you use all the most recent cards. But it's the only way you can acquire it is by buying a box. And two sets ago, the card was kind of cool, but it wasn't very important in the format. So it kind of, people were a little upset, but it just kind of went by. Then last set, the card was crazy strong and people wanted it for more than the standard format, but it was still used in a very powerful standard format deck. And that became a problem because the price became prohibitively expensive on that
card
because the availability was so low.
The card was a take an extra turn card that shuffles back into your deck. I don't see how they would have decided.
I mean,
such a
and it's an instant too.
Oh yeah, it's an instant. You know, instant time walk, shuffle back. Anyways,
yeah, they put that as the buy box promo, and people got upset and. So they've revealed the buy box promo for this new set, and it is back down, I'd say even slightly below the level of power of the first one.
Yeah, this is like intro deck rare
power
level.
It's just a really big creature with indestructible and convoke, it hasn't been a mechanic since M15. And before that, it wasn't a mechanic since the original Ravnica block.
Right. It debuted in Ravnica as the mechanic for the Selesnya Guild.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming this means we get Convoke again, which I'm fine with.
Well, let's see. The buy box promo for the first set had... It gave your instants and sorceries lifelink.
Yeah.
And that mechanic giving instants and sorceries lifelink wasn't used on any other cards in the set, so... This may be indicative, but it might not.
Convoke is a keyword, and they try to keep keywords like contained within the whole set.
Yes,
it's part of their Azfan, where they want so many representations at common and uncommon. So
right, forward. But I don't know if the buy box promo applies to that.
I would assume it is.
Well, I mean, the thing is, there hasn't been a precedent for it yet, so we'll see. I mean, if you consider spells having lifelink, some kind of take on a mechanic that might persist on other cards, it didn't.
Well, the only mechanic on it is lifelink,
right? But I mean, like, that's evergreen,
right?
Lifelink spells is not, though.
It's only appeared on one previous card.
I know, and I could see how that could be a theme set. Either way, it's been revealed. It's possible that there's Convoke. I'm skeptical. At least, I'm at least skeptical, because then would that mean that they're repeating all of the original mechanics from original Ravnica, or are they just bringing some of them back and some of the guilds are going to have new mechanics, or is there going to be multiple mechanics per guild? We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah.
Okay. So you wanted into video game news or video game topics.
This first one is regarding a game that is sort of a mix between a party game and a board game and a video game, which is actually Jackbox Party Pack 5.
Oh, so okay, yes.
The Jackbox series is a series of party games that you put up on a on a single screen with, like, you know, a console or a computer hooked up to a TV or something. And then players connect to it and interface with it with their phones.
Mm-hmm.
Usually this comes with, like, either trivia games or games where you use your phone to draw, like, an image. Or,
yeah, draw, like, sketch, like, not, like, or, like, pick a card.
Yeah, or, like, input prompts or answers to prompts. Mm-hmm. So typical party game stuff you would expect with, like, you know, Game of Things or Pictionary, for example. But they often have really interesting twists on how to do it and really funny concepts behind them. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, so Party Pack 5 was announced for October release date, finally. And they've spoiled all of the mini games that are going to be in it.
Okay, so what are the mini games? So
there is Split the Room, which is like a Would You Rather looking type of game. You know, like answering questions based on two options.
Mm-hmm.
I assume there's something to deal with, you know, a social element, because every game has some sort of social element. Then there is there's a rap battle game. I can't remember the exact name, but it is where you are robots. And I like this one because you input the text as, like, you know, just the rapping part, but it actually plays it out with a text-to-speech voice.
Okay, so you type in your lines and then
the robot reads them with text-to-speech.
That's interesting.
I know Polygon had a good gameplay video previewing that.
Oh, I'll have to check that out, because I'm interested to see how the robot voice can match the meter that you would want to go for. Because I imagine, like, you know, as a lyricist, you can kind of determine how long you hold on a specific syllable just to kind of make a sentence fit into a...
Or how you pronounce a syllable to make it rhyme or flow well.
Yeah. Like, you could say different, or you could say different. So,
or, like, you know, Eminem said syringes and oranges to rhyme with orange.
Sure. So it'll be interesting to see how that's worked out, I guess, in the program.
Yeah.
Cool. What are the other games?
Yeah, there is... the big one is You Don't Know Jack, full stream. It's a new version of You Don't Know Jack, mm-hmm. which is the trivia game that sort of kickstarted the Jackbox series. It's what Jackbox is named after.
Right.
And we haven't had one since, I think, the first Party Pack, so this will be fun. Then there is a drawing game where players are given a prompt for, like, an invention. Or, like, a player is given a prompt for a problem, and then the person has to write out how they would solve it, and then somebody else has to draw that invention. Something like that. It's a game where you invent silly things
and
then pitch it to other players. There's an optional rule for players to have time to give a sales pitch.
Interesting.
So, yeah. And then the last one, I believe that's all of them, is a cooperative physics game. It sort of looks like Angry Birds, where, like, you're using a slingshot to hurdle yourself across an arena. But instead of knocking down something, there's, like, enemies strewn about that you have to work together to kill.
Gotcha.
And it's set in an alien arena coliseum type of thing. Kind of like in Thor Ragnarok.
That'll be interesting. Because Jackbox hasn't done anything like that yet.
There was one cooperative game. It was one where, like, you have to defuse a bomb.
Yeah,
each
but...
Each player has different instructions.
I think... What I'm thinking of is, like, nothing so with so much, like, control,
with so much, like,
or motor,
like,
skill, I guess. Yeah, I mean, well, I'm just thinking of, like, the actual, like, way you interface with the game.
Oh, because right,
otherwise it's just been like strictly tapping on things or typing,
right,
and that's it. So something that involves, like, pointing and dragging, or, you know, whatever, the more interesting game inputs.
Yeah,
it should be interesting to see how that plays out and if it, like, works smoothly with the way that those games work.
Yeah.
Over a web browser.
Two other really quick video game announcements I want to jump into.
Okay.
First one is Marble It Up, which is there is a game series called Marble Blast, which is similar to the Monkey Ball series in that it's a marble game, or I guess Marble Madness is the original one, where you roll a marble through a stage, dodging obstacles and eventually getting to a goal. It's like a very arcade style type of game where it's meant to just be replayed, and you gain, you know, you get better at the game, you find new routes and tricks. Well, the Marble Blast series has been gone for a while, but this is the new series by, I believe, the same creators. And they have a trailer for it that it looks, you know, typical marble rolling game. If you've never seen one before, check it out. I think it's definitely an interesting looking take on it, updated, I guess.
Okay.
The other game is Windjammers 2, gotten announced.
Yeah.
So this is a game we played recently at a friend's house. Windjammers is a fighting game, ultimate frisbee game.
It is an ultimate frisbee game. It doesn't really have any fighting game elements to it.
It's sort of so the
it just game, really has kind of like a Street Fighter feel, like, well, visually.
It plays like a top-down shooter where you aim with a control stick and then you press a button to throw the frisbee or lob the frisbee. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you want to aim back and or you want to try to get it around your opponent with, you know, different aims or lobbing. Or
yeah, essentially shots. The entire back wall is a net and you're just trying to bounce a frisbee off walls and obstacles to throw it around your opponent and get it in their net. And your opponent just has to be in the way to catch it and then throw it back to you. And it's kind of just this fast paced game.
The interesting,
it's kind of like Pong, I guess. It's like extreme Pong.
Yeah, like Pong or Mario Tennis.
Yeah.
But the interesting take that I like is if you're standing still and you press the button to throw the frisbee right before the frisbee gets to you, you set it up in the air. And then when you stand under where the frisbee will land, you gain like a super move, which is different per character. It's like one character has one that goes in like a snake squiggly motion. Mm-hmm. Another character has one that throws it up against the wall and it rides the wall towards the goal.
Right, you get like a super throw.
Yeah. So it's fun. I put it along the same lines as Dive Kick, where like it's definitely fun to play with friends, but maybe not play online with random people.
Right.
It's simple and it's a good, you know, like easy fighting game or party fighting game almost.
And they're making a sequel now, which they haven't as far as I haven't seen any gameplay of it. All I've seen is just a trailer. And the trailer, it looks to have kind of the same art style, except the trailer was like cartoon animated and the original game was had very pixel graphics.
Yeah,
like
it was
very retro graphics.
It was like an older game anyways. So I'm not surprised that the older one had pixel graphics.
I'm just interested to see whether the new game will have the same art style, like down to the pixel graphics, or if it'll have a more updated art style and how that'll just feel and play with the type of game that it is.
Yeah.
All right. I have another video game that I want to talk about, and it also bleeds into the board gaming sphere and the party gaming sphere because I am very hype for the new Mario Party game.
Yeah.
So
Super Mario Party.
Anyone who follows Nintendo video games will know that for the last 2 years they've been going crazy, and the games that they've been releasing, at least for their mainline series, are kind of like evolutions of the previous games. That they're adding new mechanics, or they're just shaking up the format of their like main line of video games. So they came out with Zelda Breath of the Wild and Mario Odyssey, which brought
honestly I take
big advancements.
Odyssey as just a return to form.
I think it yeah, if anything it's just a solid game, but
yeah.
So they're doing the same thing with Mario Party, which is they are changing up the mechanics and the format altogether to make what looks like a tighter, more refined Mario Party experience, and it looks very fun. And they're also adding, I mean, the new mechanics that they're adding to the game look very interesting. The biggest one being that characters now have their own unique dice. So before this, characters all just rolled the same die, which went from 1 to 10. Now, characters all have access to a die that goes from 1 to 6, but in addition to that, each character has their own unique die with custom faces that will either give you like better probability of rolling numbers in the middle, or will give you a higher high end but a lower low end. or, you know, right. The lower low end may even go on to, like, take away coins, but high end is much higher.
Like, Wario has a die with four sixes, but two faces that will make you lose two coins, so it's very risk-reward.
Yeah, so that's exciting, because before then, there was no real reason to pick any character other than the fact that you like the character, so it's a cool space to design in.
Typically true.
To give interest to, and to, I don't know, if anything, just make you like certain characters a little bit more than you already did. But there's also, they use it in another way. They've shown that in parts of the game, you can acquire the dice of other characters in the middle of the game. So I really like how they built a new mechanic, they put it in the game, and then they also found some interesting ways to utilize it other than just having a character from the beginning have a unique die.
And if you've been following the Mario Party series, the last two Mario Parties had like this car format where everybody was in this car that would go on the same track. And I honestly haven't played them. I know they were pretty poorly received, but this is returning to each player individually on a single board. Moving in different directions every which way.
And the, like I said, the dice are now six-sided, so that kind of relieves some of the variance on the dice rolls. So somebody doesn't roll a 10 while other people roll less than 4, and that gives them a big lead, at least on the board-wise. Now it's only between 6 and 1, unless you're using a character's die that has, you know, a high end and a low end.
Right. And I like they've said that they're trying to make the game more strategic. Mm-hmm. And while I know I've kind of accepted Mario Party as being the anything can happen sort of game, it is nice that they're taking a approach to it similar to how like you can play Smash Bros or Mario Kart without items, and it's a completely different game then. And while I doubt they would remove items from Mario Party, giving the option for a more cerebral style of play, I think, is really welcome.
Mm-hmm. And I'm totally cool with the... Yeah, I'm very excited for it.
They're also adding grid-based maps. Mm-hmm. So instead of moving on spaces, you move on where grid. So that'll also be really interesting to see how they pull that off.
Yeah. It looks like they've really like dug deep into what makes Mario Party interesting. And then they found some interesting twists that they can add to it while still maintaining that essence. So overall,
I'm very
excited for Mario Party.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's see. There was another game I wanted to talk about. Well, I guess I kind of wanted to say that I've just beat God of War, the new God of War game. And to tie it back to the previous thing, there was kind of a funny moment at the end of God of War where at first I thought the game I was playing was going to be like a reboot in the same vein as Breath of the Wild or Odyssey, that it was going to bring this like really crazy experience and shake up the series and everything. And the third person over the shoulder perspective rather than the top down perspective in older games, plus like more RPG elements, definitely delivered a little bit of that. But at least story wise, I could see, you know, it was kind of set up to be a sequel. It was pretty obviously set up to be a sequel. And after finishing the game and the story leaving me with much to be desired, I realized like, oh yeah, They weren't like banking everything on the success of this God of War game like Nintendo was with Zelda and Mario. So I had to kind of limit my anticipations, my expectations for the game. And but it was still fun. I like the RPG elements, and it was still good. And then I just started playing Bloodborne, and I love Souls games. Also, I'm excited for Sekiro.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I really like what FromSoft has done. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have a really good grasp on just game design.
Yeah.
I think if you want really good examples of difficult games, then, I mean, obviously FromSoft is like the forefront in terms of both popularity and success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, their game is all about, their whole style is all about mastering difficulty and defining what difficulty really is, and like making you examine that, like, what you thought was difficult in other games is just, it's just a mechanic in this game, and you know, it's just something to be mastered.
Yeah.
And it's not something to be like anxious about. Yeah, I'm excited for the new game.
About FromSoft games is how they handle enemy placement. It feels a lot like the classic Castlevania games or Mega Man games, in that every enemy seems like it's put somewhere on purpose.
Absolutely.
Not just to be an enemy.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, they're usually kind of tucked away or just a little bit out of sight.
Yeah, or like there's
waiting to get the drop on you.
There's intentional squads of enemies.
Mm-hmm.
So like Bloodborne, in that very sort of alley you go through with like the villagers or the thatchers, whatever, there's like these two gunmen and then dogs that attack you if you try to get close to one of the gunmen.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know, I just think that's really interesting how it's like they've set up each encounter so that, I mean, they're not just crowds of enemies, they're very intently placed around the map. And
yeah, to get into the details of a little bit about the design, I really like the fact that the way that the game is designed, you basically have to be very attentive and you have to memorize things in the game, because if you are just reacting, it's impossible to progress very far in the game. People are always going to surprise you. And monsters are like, their attacks, the way that they work is like, only you can, it's deceptive whether or not you've staggered somebody. So like, if an enemy is in the middle of an attack animation and you attack them, sometimes it looks like your attack has stopped their animation and they're gonna like back up and do something else, but a lot of the time it merely just like puts a little pause in their animation and then they'll finish their attack. And being able to recognize that is a big part in defeating the larger enemies. And then being able to remember where the different smaller enemies have been tucked away out of your sight, where they can get the drop on you, is also important in that kind of a game. So the game is designed with these heavy-hitting enemies with deceptive animations and these smaller enemies tucked away, giving you very little access to healing or a health reserve. So that it forces you to memorize those things, because if you don't, you can't go far at all. So that's an interesting like design into modifying player activity. Yeah.
My favorite part about sort of the way FromSoft does their progression with like the Souls in Dark Souls or the Blood Echoes in Bloodborne is how they make it so you lose them when you die, but you can then pick them up if you get back there. In like sort of a, you know, typical like Diablo way, but the way they use that is to make it so that it forces you to like be safer at some point, because yeah. If you just try to like run through things or, you know, very half-handedly hack and slash through things, you're going to really quickly realize that you're not going to get your blood echoes or your souls back. So like it really quickly puts this idea in the player's head that like it's better to play safe than play quickly.
Although what's interesting in some of these games though is that playing safe in sometimes actually means just running past something.
Oh yeah.
Which is kind of funny. Like playing safe doesn't mean slowly moving your way through a dangerous area. Oftentimes playing safe means just running as fast as you can through it.
Yeah.
You have to be aware of where the threats are going to come from still, because you got to just know which corners to cut and which corners to go wide around just to leave some room. But yeah
it feels like, again, a very traditional game where you can kind of make strategies for each room or each enemy and, you know, focus on attack patterns and stuff. And I just think that that play style and rewarding that play style is very cool.
Mm-hmm. So excited for Sekiro. And I think that's all the news that I had to, or the stuff that I wanted to really talk about. Is there any games we just played? The Networks recently.
Oh yeah.
Which is deserving of a full episode, I think, sometime in the future.
Yeah, I would say so.
That's a fun game. That's all about. It's all about predicting your opponent's actions and setting yourself up for success in the right. future.
It's like it's a deduction game that has a very economic game sort of side to it. But if you want to be good, you have to learn how to read the board and pay attention to your opponents.
Mm-hmm. You have to do that, but you also kind of have to develop this habit. At least there's this habit that I have in some games where in order to reduce the number of things I have to think about actively, I'll designate some things as like safe, or I'll set myself up to say like, okay, this is safe. This is okay. I don't need to think about it. And this is a game that kind of rewards setting yourself up to be safe for a moment so that right. you can focus on other important things and leave some parts just be, because you know they're gonna keep working just fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
There what are the games that we played?
There's two video games I want to bring up.
Okay.
Two more video games at least. So there is, I've been replaying through The Witness because I've been working on like analyzing the game, because there's a lot to The Witness. It's a puzzle game that was released a couple years ago, and it's a game where the mechanics are almost deceiving when you first play it, because it's a game about drawing lines through squares in lines.
Yeah, essentially yeah. every puzzle is a grid of lines arranged in a certain way with different icons on them that clue you into how you trace a path along that grid from a start point to an end point to satisfy conditions and solve the puzzle.
Yeah, and like that might sound simple or basic, but it's explored to incredible depth.
Mm-hmm.
It takes place on like a fully realized three-dimensional space on like an island.
Right. Like another game like this, you would just like solve a puzzle and then just the whole screen would shift to another puzzle. But this game, you have to walk around an island to go to each puzzle that's resting on a panel, like in the middle of a forest or something. Like you go to that panel and do that, and then right. you got to walk to the next panel.
Yeah, and what I really like about this game that like draws me to want to make like multiple 20-minute videos on it is that everything in the game is very intentionally placed. Like, not just the objects on the puzzles, but
much like Dark Souls.
Yeah, it's the Dark Souls of puzzle games. No, where the puzzles are on the island, and not only that, but the surroundings on the island, and sort of the way it's all laid out together. Like a non-spoilery example is there is a desert, and well, not that desert. That's not a good one. So the quarry. In the quarry, which is like on a cliffside, and there's, you know, a place that removes rock from the cliff, and you know, it's a quarry. The mechanic they introduce there is a symbol that will remove another symbol from the puzzle that it's in, and these symbols are like logical conditions that have to be met. And so the quarry has the symbol that is about removing something from the puzzle, and the quarry is a building that is about removing something from the environment to make something else.
Mm-hmm.
And then like next to the quarry is a boathouse or a sawmill. And so like that's just an example of how the mechanics in the environment combine, and it goes many layers further to the point where I'm planning on making, you know, at least like 50 minutes worth of video discussing this, cuz it's quite a dense game.
Mm-hmm. And what's the other rare...
is an RPG Maker game that I bought recently that I'm really enjoying, called Jimmy in the Pulsating Mass. I don't really play a lot of RPGs. It's nothing I have against like the genre. It's just I don't often play them. But this game was really interesting. It's very Earthbound inspired, much like a certain based video game that involves underground places, and also more accurately the game Lisa, which has this very distinct like cartoonish art style that goes into horror at times, which I mean is something Earthbound had for sure. And this game's really cool because it handles combat in probably my favorite way of any RPG I've played recently, in that like it's turn-based combat, but there is very clear like strategy involved in doing so, not just attacking, because if you just attack, then the enemies will kill you easily. But so like you start with two characters. There's the main character Jimmy, who takes on, who like imagines himself as different monsters throughout the game, and then his brother Buck. And Buck has an ability that insults the one of the monsters, and it stuns them for a turn, but the next turn they cannot be stunned. And so, like, when you look at that, and then you look at how strong the enemies are, you realize that you'll have to, you know, stun one turn in order to not get hit by it. And then you realize that you can start managing these timers. And then you start working that in with, like, boss fights where you have to watch for specific messages or, like, specific moves they do so that you can stun them at the right time. And then the other really cool part that I've gotten to is that one of the forms Jimmy can take is a goon that steals things. And the steal command in the game is not just used for like getting items from enemies. It's more often used to like change the battle in a certain way. So like there's a character named Johnny Knives. He's a boss he's a boss that you fight. And if you pickpocket him, you can try to steal his knives. And if you do so successfully, he becomes Johnny No Knives, and he gets sad and doesn't attack you. And okay. There's a bunch of these neat things. Like, there's enemies that are tea kettles, and when you steal tea, it increases the MP of your party members. So, it's a very interesting game with a lot of interesting strategy involved. Each time I go to a new area or get a new ability or party member, I find like an interesting or conscious way to do so or to use it. And I'm like, I'm changing my combat strategy. So I'm not just doing the same thing every time throughout the whole game. It's very interesting. And it seems like the game has some sort of thing it's trying to convey, whether thematically or story wise. So I'm really excited to play through it some more.
All right, cool.
That's about it for me.
All right, that's about it for me. So this would be the end of our Good Stuffs episode. Thank you for listening.
Yep, thank you for checking it out.
To just do the rest of the end of episode credits and whatever. We appreciate you for listening. You can follow us on any podcast listening service and leave comments if you have some commentary, especially if you have a comment about how this was recorded. We use Discord. I think next time we're going to try Skype because the audio kept cutting out on Discord. So yeah. Maybe if that's a problem with the software, then we might try Skype next time and see if we can get it a little cleaner with less glitches. Say again, Matthew?
I was going to say that if you want to give us any other feedback directly, you can also check us out on social media.
Okay. You were just going through with the rest of the... Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
At Facebook and Twitter at BG Broscast. And you can go to our website as well at bgbcast.com, in which we have all our episodes with tags. You can, you know, check out all our other good stuffs, or you can see what episodes we've uploaded recently with their descriptions and everything.
And if you're just in the mood to go to a URL that we give you the name of, then you can go ahead and check out entertainthegeeky.com. That's where our friends Chris, Roger, and Jason host their host of podcasts. And it's also where you can find the gear store where we sell our very own t-shirts. And we had a conversation with Chris over there about the t-shirts, and he says that hopefully within the week we should be receiving our very own t-shirts, and anybody else who's ordered them up until now should also be receiving them hopefully
we'll definitely make like a tweet and a Facebook post about when we know that the shop is up and running.
And as always, you can keep an ear open for information regarding our Kickstarter, which, by the way, if you didn't listen to last week's episode or this week's episode, Matthew, tell the folks the big news.
We have a Kickstarter launch date, which will be for October 1st.
October 1st. Okay. back in right at the end there.
Yeah. Kickstarter launching October 1st, and we'll keep as many updates as possible on that. This is, of course, for our game Conniving Cooks. a bluffing and deduction card game for 2 to 6 players in which players are cooks in a fancy restaurant trying to get each other fired while also making sure the guests get their food on time. And I know we're going to be, you know, making sure we have everything up and ready and budgeted and figured out. And we're going to have some nice gameplay videos, and, you know, a typical preview video.
Yeah, typical so, Kickstarter.
Yeah, we'll be promoting this. You know, check that out when we get it up there. See if you're interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
I know it would certainly help us to get as many eyes as possible on it.
Mm-hmm.
Eyes, ears, etc.
Right, so check out the Kickstarter, and thank you for listening to this episode. We will see you next week.